Chapter 4. Summoned. Alone in her rooms in the women's apartments, Moiraine adjusted the shawl, embroidered with curling ivy and grapevines, on her shoulders and studied the effect in the tall frame mirror standing in a corner. Her large, dark eyes could appear as sharp as a hawk's when she was angry. They seemed to pierce the silvered glass now. It was only happenstance that she had had the shawl in her saddlebags when she came to Faldara. With the blazing white flame of Tar Valon centered on the wearer's back and long fringe colored to show her Adja, Moiraine's was as blue as a morning sky. The shawls were seldom worn outside Tar Valon, and even there usually only inside the White Tower. Little in Tar Valon besides a meeting of the Hall of the Tower called for the formality of the shawls, and beyond the shining walls a sight of the flame would send too many people running, to hide, or perhaps to fetch the Children of the Light. A white cloak's arrow was as fatal to an Aes Sedai as to anyone else, and the children were too wily to let an Aes Sedai see the bowman before the arrow struck, while she still might do something about it. Moiraine had certainly never expected to wear the shawl in Faldara, but for an audience with the Amyrlin, there were proprieties to observe. She was slender and not at all tall, and smooth-cheeked Aes Sedai agelessness often made her appear younger than she was, but Moiraine had a commanding grace and calm presence that could dominate any gathering. A manner ingrained growing up in the royal palace of Cairiane had been heightened, not submerged, by still more years as an Aes Sedai. She knew she might need every bit of it today, yet much of the calm was on the surface today. There must be trouble, or she would not have come herself, she thought for at least the tenth time. But beyond that lay a thousand questions more. What trouble, and who did she choose to accompany her? Why here? Why now? It cannot be allowed to go wrong now. The great serpent ring on her right hand caught the light dully as she touched the delicate golden chain fastened in her dark hair, which hung in waves to her shoulders. A small clear blue stone dangled from the chain in the middle of her forehead. Many in the White Tower knew of the tricks she could do using that stone as a focus. It was only a polished bit of blue crystal, just something a young girl had used in her first learning, with no one to guide her. That girl had remembered tales of Angrial and even more powerful Sa'angrial, those fabled remnants of the Age of Legends that allowed Aes Sedai to channel more of the one power than any could safely handle unaided. Remembered, and thought some such focus was required to channel at all. Her sisters in the White Tower knew a few of her tricks and suspected others, including some that did not exist, some that had shocked her when she learned of them. The things she did with the stone were simple and small, if occasionally useful, the kind a child would imagine. But if the wrong women had accompanied the Amyrlin, the crystal might put them off balance because of the tales. A rapid, insistent knocking came at the chamber door. No Shinaran would knock that way, not at anyone's door, but least of all hers. She remained looking into the mirror until her eyes stared back serenely, all thought hidden in their dark depths. She checked the soft leather pouch hanging at her belt. Whatever troubles brought her out of Tar Valon, she will forget them when I lay this trouble before her. A second thumping, even more vigorous than the first, sounded before she crossed the room and opened the door with a calm smile for the two women who had come for her. She recognized them both. Dark-haired Anaya in her blue-fringed shawl and fair-haired Leandrin in her red. Leandrin, not only young-seeming but young and pretty, with a doll's face and a small petulant mouth, had her hand raised to pound again. Her dark brows and darker eyes were a sharp contrast to the multitude of pale honey braids brushing her shoulders, but the combination was not uncommon in Tarabon. Both women were taller than Moiraine, though Leandrin by less than a hand. Anaya's blunt face broke into a smile as soon as Moiraine opened the door. That smile gave her the only beauty she would ever have, but it was enough. Almost everyone felt comforted, safe, and special when Anaya smiled at them. "The light shine on you, Moiraine. It's good to see you again. Are you well? It has been so long." My heart is lighter for your presence, Anaya. That was certainly true. It was good to know she had at least one friend among the Aes Sedai who had come to Faldara. The light illumine you. Leandrin's mouth tightened and she gave her shawl a twitch. The Amaryllis seat. She requires your presence, sister. Her voice was petulant, too, and cold-edged. Not for Moiraine's sake, or not solely. Leandrin always sounded dissatisfied with something. Frowning, she tried to look over Moiraine's shoulder into the room. This chamber, it is warded. We cannot enter. Why do you ward against your sisters? Against all, Moiraine replied smoothly. Many of the serving women are curious about Aes Sedai, and I do not want them pawing through my rooms when I am not here. There was no need to make a distinction until now. She pulled the door shut behind her, leaving all three of them in the corridor. Shall we go? We must not keep the Amaryllis waiting. She started down the hallway with Anaya chatting at her side. Leandrin stood for a moment staring at the door as if wondering what Moiraine was hiding, then hurried to join the others. She bracketed Moiraine, walking as stiffly as a guard. Anaya merely walked, keeping company. Their slippered footsteps fell softly on thick-woven carpets with simple patterns. Liveried women curtsied deeply as they passed, many more deeply than they would have for the Lord of Faldara himself. Aes Sedai, three together, and the Amaryllis seat herself in the keep. It was more honor than any woman of the keep had ever expected in her lifetime. A few women of noble houses were out in the halls, and they curtsied too, which they most certainly would not have done for Lord Agelmar. Moiraine and Anaya smiled and bowed their heads to acknowledge each reverence, from servant or noble equally. Leandrin ignored them all. There were only women here, of course, no men. No Shinaran male above the age of 10 would enter the women's rooms without permission or invitation, although a few small boys ran and played in the halls here. They knelt on one knee, awkwardly, when their sisters dropped deep curtsies. Now and then Anaya smiled and ruffled a small head as she passed. This time, Moiraine, Anaya said, you have been gone from Tar Valon too long, much too long. Tar Valon misses you, your sisters miss you, and you are needed in the White Tower. Some of us must work in the world, Moiraine said gently. I will leave the Hall of the Tower to you, Anaya. Yet in Tar Valon, you hear more of what occurs in the world than I. Too often I outrun what happens where I was yesterday. What news have you? Three more false dragons, Leandrin bit the words off. In Saldea, Mirandi, and Tyr, false dragons ravage the land, the while you blues smile and talk of nothing and try to hold on to the past. Anaya raised an eyebrow, and Leandrin snapped her mouth shut with a sharp sniff. Three, Moiraine mused softly. For an instant her eyes gleamed, but she masked it quickly. Three in the last 2 years, and now three more at once. As the others were, these will be dealt with also. This male vermin and any ragtag rabble who follow their banners. Moiraine was almost amused by the certainty in Leandrin's voice. Almost. She was too aware of the realities, too aware of the possibilities. Moiraine was almost amused by the certainty in Leandrin's voice. Almost. She was too aware of the realities, too aware of the possibilities. Have a few months been enough for you to forget, sister? The last false dragon all but tore Gil'dan apart before his army, ragtag, rabble or not, was defeated. Yes, Loghain is in Tar Valon by now, gentled and safe, I suppose, but some of our sisters died to overpower him. Even one sister dead is more loss than we can bear, but Gil'dan's losses were much worse. The two before Loghain could not channel, yet even so the people of Kandor and Arad Doman remember them well. Villages burned, and men dead in battle. How easily can the world deal with three at one time? How many will flock to their banners? There has never been a shortage of followers for any man claiming to be the dragon reborn. How great will the wars be this time? It isn't so grim as that, Anaya said. As far as we know, only the one in Saldea can channel. He has not had time to attract many followers, and sisters should already be there to deal with him. The Tyrans are harrying their false dragon and his followers through Haddon Merc, while the fellow in Mirandi is already in chains. She gave a short, wondering laugh. To think the Mirandians of all people would deal with theirs so quickly. Ask, and they do not even call themselves Mirandians, but Lugarders, or Inish Linni, or this or that lord's or lady's man. Yet for fear one of their neighbors would take the excuse to invade, the Mirandians leaped on their false dragon almost as soon as he opened his mouth to proclaim himself. Still, Moiraine said, three at the same time cannot be ignored. Has any sister been able to do a foretelling? It was a slight chance. Few Aes Sedai had manifested any part of that talent, even the smallest part, in centuries, so she was not surprised when Anaya shook her head. Not surprised, but a little relieved. They reached a juncture of hallways at the same time as the Lady Amalisa. She dropped a full curtsy, bowing deep and spreading her pale green skirts wide. "Honor to Tar Valon," she murmured. "Honor to Aes Sedai." The sister of the Lord of Faldara required more than a nod of the head. Moiraine took Amalisa's hands and drew her to her feet. "You honor us, Amalisa. Rise, sister." Amalisa straightened gracefully with a flush on her face. She had never as much as been to Tar Valon, and to be called sister by an Aes Sedai was heady even for someone of her rank. Short and of middle years, she had a dark, mature beauty, and the color in her cheeks set it off. "You honor me too greatly, Moiraine Sedai." Moiraine smiled. "How long have we known each other, Amalisa? Must I now call you my Lady Amalisa, as if we had never sat over tea together?" "Of course not." Amalisa smiled back. The strength evident in her brother's face was in hers, too, and no less for the softer line of cheek and jaw. There were those who said that as hard and renowned a fighter as Agilmar was, he was no better than an even match for his sister. But with the Amerlin seat here, when King Izar visits Faldara, in private I call him Magami, little uncle, as I did when I was a child and he gave me rides on his shoulder, but in public it must be different. Anaya tisked. "Sometimes formality is necessary, but men often make more of it than they must. Please, call me Anaya, and I will call you Amalisa, if I may." From the corner of her eye, Moiraine saw Egwene, far down the side hall, disappearing hurriedly around a corner. A stooped shape in a leather jerkin, head down and arms loaded with bundles, shambled at her heels. Moiraine permitted herself a small smile, quickly masked. "If the girl shows as much initiative in Tar Valon," she thought wryly, "she will sit in the Amerlin seat one day. If she can learn to control that initiative, if there is an Amerlin seat left on which to sit." When she turned her attention back to the others, Leandrin was speaking. "And I would welcome the chance to learn more of your land." She wore a smile, open and almost girlish, and her voice was friendly. Moiraine schooled her face to stillness as Amalisa extended an invitation to join her and her ladies in her private garden, and Leandrin accepted warmly. Leandrin made few friends, and none outside the Red Aja. Certainly never outside the Aes Sedai. She would sooner make friends with a man or a Trolloc. Moiraine was not sure Leandrin saw much difference between men and Trollocs. She was not sure any of the Red Aja did. Anaya explained that just now they must attend the Amerlin seat. "Of course," Amalisa said. "The light illumine her and the Creator shelter her. But later then." She stood straight and bowed her head as they left her. Moiraine studied Leandrin as they walked, never looking at her directly. The honey-haired Aes Sedai was staring straight ahead, rosebud lips pursed thoughtfully. She appeared to have forgotten Moiraine and Anaya both. What is she up to? Anaya seemed not to have noticed anything out of the ordinary, but then she always managed to accept people both as they were and as they wanted to be. It constantly amazed Moiraine that Anaya dealt as well as she did in the White Tower, but those who were devious always seemed to take her openness and honesty, her acceptance of everyone, as cunning devices. They were always caught completely off balance when she turned out to mean what she said and say what she meant. Two, she had a way of seeing to the heart of things and of accepting what she saw. Now she blithely resumed speaking of the news. The word from Andor is both good and bad. The street riots in Camelin died down with the coming of spring, but there is still talk, too much talk, blaming the Queen, and Tar Valon as well, for the long winter. Morghese holds her throne less securely than she did last year, but she holds it still, and will, so long as Gareth Bryn is Captain General of the Queen's Guards. And the Lady Elaine, the daughter heir, and her brother, the Lord Gawain, have come safely to Tar Valon for their training. There was some fear in the White Tower that the custom would be broken. "Not while Morghese has breath in her body," Moiraine said. Leandrin gave a little start, as if she had just awakened. "Pray that she continues to have breath. The daughter heir's party was followed to the River Arinen by the Children of the Light, to the very bridges of Tar Valon. More still camp outside Camelin for the chance of mischief, and inside Camelin still are those who listen." "Perhaps it is time Morghese learned a little caution," Anaya sighed. "The world is becoming more dangerous every day, even for a queen, perhaps especially for a queen. She was ever headstrong. I remember when she came to Tar Valon as a girl. She did not have the ability to become a full sister, and it rankled in her. Sometimes I think she pushes her daughter because of that, whatever the girl chooses." Moiraine sniffed disdainfully. "Elaine was born with the spark in her. It was not a matter of choosing. Morghese would not risk letting the girl die from lack of training if all the white cloaks in Amadicia were camped outside Camelin. She would command Gareth Bryn and the Queen's guards to cut a path through them to Tar Valon, and Gareth Bryn would do it if he had to do it alone. But she still must keep the full extent of the girl's potential secret. Would the people of Andor knowingly accept Elaine on the Lion Throne after Morghese if they knew? Not just a queen trained in Tar Valon according to custom, but a full Aes Sedai? In all of recorded history, there had been only a handful of queens with the right to be called Aes Sedai, and the few who let it be known had all lived to regret it. She felt a touch of sadness, but too much was afoot to spare aid or even worry for one land and one throne. What else, Anaya? You must know that the Great Hunt of the Horn has been called in Ilion the first time in 400 years. The Ilioners say the last battle is coming. Anaya gave a little shiver, as well she might, but went on without a pause. And the Horn of Valair must be found before the final battle against the Shadow. Men from every land are already gathering, all eager to be part of the legend, eager to find the horn. Mirandi and Altara are on their toes, of course, thinking it's all a mask for a move against one of them. That is probably why the Mirandians caught their false dragon so quickly. In any case, there will be a new lot of stories for the bards and gleemen to add to the cycle. The light send it is only new stories.
Perhaps not the stories they expect, Moiraine said.
Leandrin looked at her sharply, and she kept her face still. I suppose not, Anaya said placidly. The stories they least expect will be exactly the ones they will add to the cycle. Beyond that, I have only rumor to offer. The sea folk are agitated, their ships flying from port to port with barely a pause. Sisters from the islands say the Karamor, their chosen one, is coming, but they won't say more. You know how close-mouthed the Atha An Mi'er are with outsiders about the Karamor, and in this our sisters seem to think more as sea folk than Aes Sedai. The Aiel appear to be stirring, too, but no one knows why. No one ever knows with the Aiel. At least there is no evidence they mean to cross the spine of the world again, thank the light. She sighed and shook her head. What would I not give for even one sister from among the Aiel? Just one. We know too little of them. Moiraine laughed. Sometimes I think you belong in the Brown Aja, Anaya. Almuth Plain, Leandrin said, and looked surprised that she had spoken. Now that truly is rumor, sister, Anaya said. A few whispers heard as we were leaving Tar Valon. There may be fighting on Almuth Plain and perhaps Toman Head as well. I say maybe. The whispers were faint. Rumors of rumors,
We left before we could hear more. It would have to be Taraban and Arad Doman, Moiraine said and shook her head. They have squabbled over Almuth Plain for nearly 300 years, but it has never come to open blows. She looked at Leandrin. Aes Sedai were supposed to throw off all their old loyalties to lands and rulers, but few did so completely. It was hard not to care for the land of your birth. Why would they now—
Enough of idle talk, the honey-haired woman broke in angrily. For you, Moiraine, the Amerlin waits.
She took 3 quick strides ahead of the others and threw open one of a pair of tall doors.
For you, the Amerlin will have no idle talk.
Unconsciously touching the pouch at her waist, Moiraine went past Leandrin through the doorway, with a nod, as if the other woman were holding the door for her. She did not even smile at the white flash of anger on Leandrin's face.
What is the wretched girl up to?
Brightly colored carpets covered the anteroom floor in layers, and the room was pleasantly furnished with chairs and cushioned benches and small tables, the wood simply worked or just polished. Brocaded curtains sided the tall arrow slits to make them seem more like windows. No fires burned in the fireplaces. The day was warm, and the Shinaran chill would not come until nightfall. Fewer than 6 of the Aes Sedai who had accompanied the Amerlin were there. Verin Mathwin and Sarah Fell of the Brown Aja did not look up at Moiraine's entrance. Sarah Fell was intently reading an old book with a worn, faded leather cover, handling its tattered pages carefully, while plump Verin, sitting cross-legged beneath an arrow slit, held a small blossom up to the light and made notes and sketches in a precise hand in a book balanced on her knee. She had an open ink pot on the floor beside her and a small pile of flowers on her lap. The Brown sisters concerned themselves with little besides seeking knowledge. Moiraine sometimes wondered if they were really aware of what was going on in the world, or even immediately around them. The 3 other women already in the room turned, but they made no effort to approach Moiraine, only looked at her. One, a slender woman of the yellow Aja, she did not know. She spent too little time in Tar Valon to know all the Aes Sedai, although their numbers were no longer very great. She was acquainted with the 2 remaining, however. Carlinia was as pale of skin and cold of manner as the white fringe on her shawl, the exact opposite in every way of dark, fiery Alanna Mosvani of the Green. But they both stood and stared at her without speaking, without expression. Alanna sharply snugged her shawl around her, but Carlinia made no move at all. The slender yellow sister turned away with an air of regret.
"The light illumine you all, sisters," Moiraine said. No one answered. She was not sure Seraphel or Verin had even heard.
Where are the others? There was no need for them all to be there. Most would be resting in their rooms, freshing from the journey, but she was on edge now, all the questions she could not ask running through her head. None of it showed on her face. The inner door opened and Liana appeared, without her gilt-flamed staff. The Keeper of the Chronicles was as tall as most men, willowy and graceful, still beautiful, with coppery skin and short dark hair. She wore a blue stole a hand wide instead of a shawl, for she sat in the hall of the tower, though as keeper, not to represent her Aja.
"There you are," she said briskly to Moiraine and gestured to the door behind her. "Come, sister, the Amerlin seat is waiting."
She spoke naturally in a clipped, quick way that never changed, whether she was angry or joyful or excited.
As Moiraine followed Liana in, she wondered what emotion the keeper was feeling now. Liana pulled the door to behind them. It banged shut with something of the sound of a cell door closing.
The Amerlin seat herself sat behind a broad table in the middle of the carpet, and on the table rested a flattened cube of gold, the size of a travel chest, and ornately worked with silver. The table was heavily built, its legs stout, but it seemed to squat under a weight 2 strong men would have had trouble lifting. At the sight of the golden cube, Moiraine had difficulty keeping her face unruffled. The last she had seen of it, it had been safely locked in Agilmar's strong room. On learning of the Amerlin seat's arrival, she had meant to tell her of it herself. That it was already in the Amerlin's possession was a trifle, but a worrisome trifle.
events could be outpacing her. She swept a deep curtsy and said formally, "As you called me, Mother, so have I come." The Amaryllin extended her hand, and Moiraine kissed her great serpent ring, no different from that of any other Aes Sedai. Rising, she made her tone more conversational, but not too much so. She was aware of the keeper standing behind her, beside the door. "I hope you had a pleasant journey, Mother." The Amaryllin had been born in Tyr of a simple fisherman's family, not a noble house, and her name was Siuan Sanche, though very few had used that name or even thought of it in the 10 years since she had been raised from the hall of the tower. She was the Amaryllin seat, that was the whole of it. The broad stole on her shoulders was striped in the colors of the 7 Ajahs. The Amaryllin was of all Ajahs and of none. She was only of medium height, and handsome rather than beautiful, but her face held a strength that had been there before her elevation, the strength of the girl who had survived the streets of the Mall, Tyr's port district, and her clear blue gaze had made kings and queens, and even the captain commander of the Children of the Light, drop their eyes. Her own eyes were strained now, and there was a new tightness to her mouth. "We called the winds to speed our vessels up the Erinnin, daughter, and even turned the currents to our aid." The Amaryllin's voice was deep and sad. "I have seen the flooding we caused in villages along the river, and the light only knows what we have done to the weather. We will not have endeared ourselves by the damage we've done and the crops we may have ruined. All to reach here as quickly as possible." Her eyes strayed to the ornate golden cube, and she half lifted a hand as if to touch it, but when she spoke, it was to say, "Elida is in Tar Valon, daughter. She came with Elaine and Gawain."
Moiraine was conscious of Lyanna standing to one side, quiet as always in the presence of the Amaryllin,
but watching and listening. "I am surprised, Mother," she said carefully. "This is no time for Morghais to be without Aes Sedai counsel." Morghais was one of the few rulers to openly admit to an Aes Sedai counselor. Almost all had one, but few admitted it. "Elida insisted, daughter, and queen or not, I doubt Morghais is a match for Elida in a contest of wills. In any case, perhaps this time she did not wish to be. Elaine has potential, more than I have ever seen before. Already she shows progress. The Red Sisters are swollen up like pufffish with it. I don't think the girl leans to their way of thinking, but she is young and there is no telling. Even if they don't manage to bend her, it will make little difference. Elaine could well be the most powerful Aes Sedai in 1,000 years, and it is the Red Aja who found her. They have gained much status in the hall from the girl." "I have 2 young women with me in Faldara, Mother," Moiraine said. "Both from the 2 rivers, where the blood of Mon Etherin still runs strong, though they do not even remember there was once a land called Mon Etherin. The old blood sings, Mother, and it sings loudly in the 2 rivers. Egwene, a village girl, is at least as strong as Elaine. I have seen the daughter heir, and I know. As for the other, Nynaeve was the wisdom in their village, yet she is little more than a girl herself. It says something of her that the women of her village chose her wisdom at her age. Once she gains conscious control of what she now does without knowing, she will be as strong as any in Tar Valon. With training, she will shine like a bonfire beside the candles of Elaine and Egwene. And there is no chance these 2 will choose the red. They are amused by men, exasperated by them, but they do like them. They will easily counter whatever influence the Red Aja gains in the White Tower from finding Elaine." The Amaryllin nodded as if it were all of no consequence. Moiraine's eyebrows lifted in surprise before she caught herself and smoothed her features. Those were the 2 main concerns in the Hall of the Tower, that fewer girls who could be trained to channel the one power were found every year, or so it seemed, and that fewer of real power were found. Worse than the fear in those who blamed Aes Sedai for the breaking of the world, worse than the hatred from the Children of the Light, worse even than the workings of Dark Friends, were the sheer dwindling of numbers and the lessening of abilities. The corridors of the White Tower were sparsely populated, where once they had been crowded, and what could once be done easily with the one power could now be done only with difficulty or not at all. Elida had another reason for coming to Tar Valon, daughter. She sent the same message by 6 different pigeons to make sure I received it, and to whom else in Tar Valon she sent pigeons I can only guess, then came herself. She told the hall of the tower that you are meddling with a young man who is Tar Viren and dangerous. He was in Camelin, she said, but when she found the inn where he had been staying, she discovered you had spirited him away. The people at that inn served us well and faithfully, mother. If she harmed any of them— Moiraine could not keep the sharpness out of her voice, and she heard Leanne shift. One did not speak to the Amerlin seat in that tone. Not even a king on his throne did. You should know, daughter, the Amerlin said dryly, that Elida harms no one except those she considers dangerous, dark friends, or those poor fool men who try to channel the one power, or one who threatens Tar Valon. Everyone else who isn't Aes Sedai might as well be pieces on a stones board as far as she is concerned. Luckily for him, the innkeeper, one Master Gill, as I remember, apparently thinks much of Aes Sedai, and so answered her questions to her satisfaction. Elida actually spoke well of him. But she spoke more of the young man you took away with you. More dangerous than any man since Arthur Hawkwing, she said. She has the foretelling sometimes, you know, and her words carried weight with the hall.
For Lyanna's sake, Moiraine made her voice as meek as she could.
That was not very meek, but it was the best she could do. I have 3 young men with me, mother, but none of them is a king, and I doubt very much if any of them even dreams of uniting the world under one ruler. No one has dreamed Arthur Hawkwing's dream since the War of the 100 Years. Yes, daughter. Village youths, so Lord Agelmar tells me. But one of them is Tar Viren. The Amerlin's eyes strayed to the flattened cube again. It was put forward in the hall that you should be sent into retreat for contemplation. This was proposed by one of the sitters for the green Aja, with the other 2 nodding approval as she spoke.
Lyanna made a sound of disgust, or perhaps frustration.
She always kept in the background when the Amerlin seat spoke, but Moiraine could understand the small interruption this time. The green Aja had been allied with the blue for 1,000 years. Since Arthur Hawkwing's time, they had all but spoken with one voice. I have no desire to hoe vegetables in some remote village, mother. Nor will I, whatever the hall of the tower says. It was further proposed also by the Greens that your care during your retreat should be given to the red Aja. The red sitters tried to appear surprised, but they looked like fisher birds who knew the catch was unguarded. The Amerlin sniffed. The Reds professed reluctance to take custody of one not of their Aja, but said they would accede to the wishes of the hall. Despite herself, Moiraine shivered. That would be most unpleasant, mother. It would be worse than unpleasant, much worse. The Reds were never gentle. She put the thought of it firmly to one side to deal with later. Mother, I cannot understand this apparent alliance between the Greens and the Reds. Their beliefs, their attitudes toward men, their views of our very purposes as Aes Sedai are completely opposite. A red and a green cannot even talk to each other without coming to shouts. Things change, daughter. 4 of the last 5 women raised Amerlin have come from the blue. Perhaps they feel that is too many, or that the blue way of thinking no longer suffices in a world full of false dragons. After 1,000 years, many things change.
The Amerlin grimaced and spoke as if to herself. Old walls weaken, and old barriers fall. She shook herself, and her voice firmed. There was yet another proposal, one that still smells like weak old fish on the jetty. Since Lyanna is of the Blue Aja and I came from the Blue, it was put forward that sending 2 sisters of the Blue with me on this journey would give the Blue 4 representatives. Proposed in the hall, to my face, as if they were discussing repairing the drains. 2 of the white sisters stood against me and 2 green. the yellow muttered among themselves, then would not speak for or against. One more saying nay, and your sisters Anaya and Maigan would not be here. There was even some talk, open talk, that I should not leave the White Tower at all. Moiraine felt a greater shock than on hearing that the Red Aja wanted her in their hands. Whatever Aja she came from, the Keeper of the Chronicles spoke only for the Amerlin, and the Amerlin spoke for all Aes Sedai and all Ajas. That was the way it had always been, and no one had ever suggested otherwise, not in the darkest days of the Trolloc Wars, not when Archer Hawkwing's armies had penned every surviving Aes Sedai inside Tar Valon. Above all, the Amerlin seat was the Amerlin seat. Every Aes Sedai was pledged to obey her. No one could question what she did or where she chose to go. This proposal went against 3,000 years of custom and law. "Who would dare, Mother?" The Amerlin seat's laugh was bitter. "Almost anyone, daughter. Riots in Camelin, the great hunt called without any of us having a hint of it until the proclamation, false dragons popping up like red bells after a rain, nations fading, and more nobles playing at the game of houses than at any time since Archer Hawkwing cut all their plottings short. And worst of all, every one of us knows the Dark One is stirring again. Show me a sister who does not think the White Tower is losing its grip on events, and if she is not Brown Aja, she is dead. Time may be growing short for all of us, daughter. Sometimes I think I can almost feel it growing shorter."
"As you say, Mother, things change, but there are still worse perils outside the Shining Walls than within."
For a long moment the Amerlin met Moiraine's gaze, then nodded slowly. "Leave us, Lyanna. I would talk to my daughter Moiraine alone." There was only a moment's hesitation before Lyanna said, "As you wish, Mother." Moiraine could feel her surprise. The Amerlin gave few audiences without the Keeper present, especially not to a sister she had reason to chastise. The door opened and closed behind Lyanna. She would not say a word in the anteroom of what had occurred inside, but the news that Moiraine was alone with the Amerlin would spread through the Aes Sedai and Faldara like wildfire through a dry forest, and the speculation would begin. As soon as the door closed, the Amerlin stood, and Moiraine felt a momentary tingle in her skin as the other woman channeled the one power. For an instant, the Amerlin seat seemed to her to be surrounded by a nimbus of bright light. "I don't know that any of the others have your old trick," the Amerlin seat said, lightly touching the blue stone on Moiraine's forehead with one finger. "But most of us have some small tricks remembered from childhood. In any event, no one can hear what we say now." Suddenly she threw her arms around Moiraine, a warm hug between old friends. Moiraine hugged back as warmly. "You are the only one, Moiraine, with whom I can remember who I was. Even Lyanna always acts as if I had become the stole and the staff, even when we are alone, as if we'd never giggled together as novices. Sometimes I wish we still were novices, you and I, still innocent enough to see it all as a gleeman's tale come true, still innocent enough to think we would find men. They would be princes, remember, handsome and strong and gentle, who could bear to live with women of an Aes Sedai's power. Still innocent enough to dream of the happy ending to the gleeman's tale, of living our lives as other women do, just with more than they. We are Aes Sedai, Siouan. We have our duty. Even if you and I had not been born to channel, would you give it up for a home and a husband, even a prince? I do not believe it. That is a village goodwife's dream. Not even the greens go so far." The Amerlin stepped back. "No, I would not give it up. Most of the time, no. But there have been times I envied that village goodwife. At this moment, I almost do. Moiraine, if anyone, even Lyanna, discovers what we plan, we will both be stilled. And I can't say they would be wrong to do it.